The pandemic has changed a lot about how we spend our time, including the ways in which we spend our leisure time. Today's guest tells us that the entertainment industry, built on storytelling, has been impacted as much as any by the pandemic. She's Kate Arthur this week on Story in the Public Square. Hello and welcome to Story in the Public Square, where storytelling meets public affairs. I'm Jim Lutis from the Pell Center at Salve Regina University. Joining me, as he does every week, is my great friend and colleague, G. Wayne Miller of the Providence Journal. At Story in the Public Square, we talk about big issues with great guests, storytellers, novelists, journalists, and more, to make sense of the big stories shaping the United States today. This week, we're joined by Kate Arthur, editor-at-large at Variety and one of the accomplished journalists covering the entertainment industry. Kate, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So there's a lot we want to talk to you about today, but let's start a little bit about you. You just recently joined Variety, am I right?
August 19th was my year anniversary.
Okay, so tell us a little.
It feels like a lifetime considering everything that's happened.
It's been a momentous year. How did you get to Variety?
I was at BuzzFeed for more than 6 years. And before that, I'd been at the Daily Beast and the LA Times. And I had always admired Variety magazine and the trade journalism they do. And so at a certain point, I started talking to them about coming over there. And it just seemed the right time to leave BuzzFeed and to join Variety. So,
well, I wonder if I could ask you a question, sort of pre-pandemic, sort of tell us what was the state of the entertainment industry, you know, prior to March 2020.
Everything was, I mean, how young we were then. I mean, everything was going as always. Movies were being released. TV shows were premiering. There were red carpets at movie premieres. There were red carpets at some TV premieres. Filming production for TV and film all over the world. Everything was booming. And, certain companies were doing better than others. Disney was dominating the world, as it has for the past several years, in terms of box office and culture. And now everything has changed. So, yeah, it's a whole other world right now.
So I would argue that the pre-pandemic era was sort of a golden age for TV and movies, certainly for TV, with producers like Netflix and the online people, Apple and so forth and so on. There was so much good content, still is, of course, because you can watch all of that still now.
Yes.
Then pandemic hit. So walk us through what happened to the industry in general, starting in March of 2020, when it was clear that this was a pandemic that was going to shift the world.
Yes. So, there was that week in March, I think on the Monday, the WHO declared coronavirus a pandemic. I think that was what happened on the Monday. On the Wednesday, Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson announced that they had contracted coronavirus in Australia. That was the same day that the NBA suspended its season and so did the NHL. And after that, it was just production shutdown after production shutdown. The unions got involved, and it was like watching the world record dominoes event. And it was like a real scramble and a panic, and some shows had to cut their seasons short. Other movies all over the world shut down production. And no one knew anything about how the virus was transmitted. It was like a true panic. And everything shut down. By that Monday, I don't think anything, by the next Monday, I don't think anything was filming in Los Angeles or New York City or in the other places where production is based.
So it's obviously a giant industry, one of the biggest industries on the planet, and certainly one of the biggest industries here in the United States. So many people at so many levels were affected, from the A-list stars down to riggers and electricians and so forth. And I'd like to get into a little of that. Start with the stars. I mean, financially, they probably had less to worry about. But what did they do? You know, Tom Hanks, as you mentioned, did recover, but there are a lot of other people. Just generally, what happened to the stars? Where did they go? What happened?
I think people were far flung. And, you know, if you watched any of the Saturday Night Lives that were produced, it was like, are any of them in New York City? Like, they're surrounded by trees, like where. So I think that, you know, people who are famous and have a lot of money and resources retreated to various country homes, or a lot of people who were New York based moved to Los Angeles, where for a while things were under control, you know, shut down, of course, but under control. And you know, but it was truly devastating to what's called, referred to as below the line talent, the crews that rely on, you know, paycheck to paycheck for many of them, I assume, to work and support their lives and their families. And you know, none of the relief bills have helped them in any way, and you know, there has been no relief for the industry in terms of like the working people.
And that certainly has been the case for Broadway as well, which Variety, of course, covers brilliantly along with everything else. Do you have any stories of those basically blue collar workers? What are they doing now? How are they getting by? You mentioned they're not getting the proper aid. They have homes and families and health to think of. It must be a terrible situation.
Yeah. Well, production has restarted, so I think a lot of them are getting back to work. The production people I was speaking to in March weren't really caring about their wallets. They were caring about their safety. And there was a show that we did some reporting on ABC, The Goldbergs, that was kind of refusing to shut down for a little bit. They were just, the leads on the show said they weren't nervous and they were about to film their final episode. And their attitude was, let's just do this. And we spoke to a lot of members of the crew who, of course, have friends on crews across the city, and everyone's safety was being prioritized except for theirs. And so they, you know, they really wanted it to shut down. I mean, I assume that a lot of those people ended up getting unemployment, especially the enhanced unemployment that existed for a few months. And hopefully some of them are getting back to work with the safety protocols. I know the Goldbergs started shooting in Los Angeles about a month ago.
What about the unions? There are a lot of unions that represent people throughout the industry. There's the Writers Guild, there are unions for riggers and so forth. Have they been able to help in any way with these people?
Financially, you mean?
Yeah. Well, anyway, but starting with financially, yes.
I don't think so. I think that they were trying to, there were certain funds that were available. IATSE is the name of the union for crews, and you know, but SAG-AFTRA, which is the actors union, not only, as far as I know, didn't help anyone, but they recently gutted their health plan so that many fewer people are going to be covered, and people are devastated about it. So the unions have not necessarily been, I don't know what more they could have done, but you know, I don't know that they've been a lifeline for people in the industry.
Kate, coming back to sort of the productions that were stopped, so I'm of a certain demographic, so I was looking forward to Bond and I was looking forward to Top Gun. Talk to us a little bit about how some of those big blockbusters have been delayed and what that does to the industry overall.
Well, along with all productions being shut down, when movie theaters closed, every release date was one by one postponed. Like some of the huge summer tent poles that were supposed to come out in June, Wonder Woman 1984 was supposed to come out, that got pushed. Mulan was supposed to come out in March, actually, that got pushed and eventually went to streaming. And Bond was no was April, I think, and got pushed to November. That was the first movie that got pushed. And that one might hold its date, actually. We can return to that later. So yeah, I mean, movie theaters, when there are no movie theaters open, then you can't release movies in them. And certain companies started releasing things on VOD. Universal Studio was very aggressive about that. They started in March, I think. They started movies that had still been in theaters, in The Invisible Man, which had been a hit for them. They put it on premium VOD right away. And premium VOD is $19.99. And the movie theaters were furious, and that was like a big thing to negotiate. AMC Theaters was enraged about that and said they weren't going to show any more Universal movies. Then they worked it out. So,
Well,
but
do you think that this is going to have a lasting impact on the way? So, yeah, I mean, growing up, watching a new release on my little, 24-inch screen television at home really wasn't that enticing. But, people now have 65, 70-inch flat screens in their homes and they've got surround sound in their homes. Is this experience, do you think it will have any meaningful impact on the way we consume, particularly feature films?
certainly. I mean, as you say, like it used to be like, oh, I'll watch it at home. And there was a certain tier of movies that you didn't really care about that you'd be like, yeah, I'll rent that. And then when streaming became a thing, it was like, I can't imagine to watching something on my computer. That seems, not a great experience. And then it was, I don't know if I can watch a movie on my phone. And now people do all of those things. I do those things. And so for sure, I mean, people don't feel safe going to movie theaters. Warner Brothers did release Tenet at the end of the summer. It did well internationally. It's not going to make back its money. It did well internationally, but it did not do well in the US because two of the major markets, New York and Los Angeles, are still closed. But it has it, I think it's a sea change for the movie theater industry, and it was already a challenged business.
We need to take a quick moment for station identification. This is Story in the Public Square, where storytelling meets public affairs. An audio version of this show can be heard four times every weekend on SiriusXM Satellite Radio's popular Politics of the United States. That's the POTUS channel, number 124. We produce Story in the Public Square with a great crew at Rhode Island PBS, and we're lucky to work with them. I'm Jim Lutis. On most days, you can find me running the Pell Center at Salve Regina University in beautiful Newport, Rhode Island. If you want to connect with me on Twitter, you can do so at JM Lutis. Joining me, as he does every week in the co-host chair, is my friend G. Wayne Miller. He's an award-winning journalist with the Providence Journal and the author of 17 books. You can find Wayne on Twitter too, at G. Wayne Miller. And our guest this week is Kate Arthur, an accomplished entertainment industry journalist and columnist who now serves as editor at large of Variety, one of the top news properties covering the entertainment industry. Kate is on Twitter as well, at Kate Arthur. And I'm going to spell that. That's KateAuthur.
So let's take a look at the corporate side and sort of the bottom line. Disney lost almost $5 billion in a three-month period ending at the end of June. And they just this week announced a number of layoffs. Most of those are related to their theme parks. Disneyland can't open in still California. Disney World is at reduced capacity. So there clearly is an impact on the bottom line. Talk about that, starting, I guess, with Disney, the sort of the giant of the industry.
Disney's entire theatrical business is these huge, huge movies. You know, Black Widow was coming out in May. That couldn't happen. And now it's been pushed into, I don't even know whether they've announced a release date for it. Its whole business is on the cinematic experience. And, you know, they've been the most powerful company in the world with the Avengers franchise and with all of the live action remakes of their animated movies. And, you know, Mulan was one of those. And it's just cut them off at the knees. The parks are, some of them in different parts of the world and in Florida are open at reduced capacities. I don't know. I guess at their next earnings report, we'll see how those are doing. But yeah, and Disneyland hasn't been allowed to reopen. So it's a real challenge to their business model in particular.
What about some of the other studios? You mentioned Warner Brothers. Talk about Warner Brothers. They produced Tenet, is that correct?
They did, yeah.
And that just opened this month, September, in the US.
Yeah. Tenet, as of last weekend, had made about $280 million worldwide, which is nothing to sneeze at. But it cost $200 million, which means it needs to make at least $400 million to even eke into a profit. The sign that people didn't think that was good enough is when all of the other movies pushed their release dates after those numbers started coming in. And that's what happened. Wonder Woman 1984 got moved to Christmas. Black Widow got pushed. Bond is still holding its date for now. By the time this is on, I'm not sure what will have happened. But James Bond movies, Jim, have never cared about US audiences. That's just been gravy. It's a huge international property. So if movie theaters around the world are still open, then Bond might be the next movie that tests the model right now.
Well, you mentioned sort of the international dynamic to all of this, and one of the things that strikes me about the film industry is just truly how global it is, including in the financing. And I'm wondering if you have any sense of whether or not the pandemic is going to affect the way feature films in particular are financed, particularly that international dynamic.
I'm not sure, actually. In terms of moving, like the Batman is in production now in London. Jurassic World is in production. Movies in Australia have been able to go back into production. So I'm not sure whether the financing will be affected at all. And there are certain companies, like I think Sky announced that it's been affected by the pandemic, certainly, but it's on the road to recovery. That's based in the UK. So I'm not sure.
So my perception is that the pandemic has been, quote unquote, a boon to some of the streaming companies, Netflix, for example, Hulu. I mean, as we've talked about here already, people are home. They're watching a lot of TV, maybe even more TV than ever. Is that a correct way to describe this for Netflix and the other big streamers, that it's been an advantage of sorts?
Yes, Netflix has, in the two quarters that have reported earnings since everything in March, Netflix has blown away expectations, subscriptions, and, you know, and I mean, it's keeping people sanity, you know, Netflix. Amazon, you know, is obviously become a huge lifeline for people because for many reasons. You know, I think that many people, more people have checked out Amazon Prime shows, Hulu, HBO Max, which launched in May, had disappointing subscriptions, but you know, we'll see what happens with that.
I know that as you say, things change fast and we don't have crystal balls. But if we did, if you were to look ahead at the first half of 2021, let's be optimists and think that perhaps we get the pandemic under control here in the United States. There's a vaccine or some other progress that changes the game. How do you think the film industry in particular emerges from this period?
Oh, Jim, don't make
me. I asked all the easy questions, right?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I mean, right now, production is back for movies. Movie theaters are largely remain closed. So production is back for movies to be made for movie theaters that are not open. So we don't know. I mean, I think as soon as people feel comfortable being in public, you know, they will start to venture out again. I think it's a matter of like testing what you feel like you can do. I went to see Tenet in a theater in Vancouver, where I am right now. And, you know, I wore a mask, I had a face shield, I was like a crazy hand sanitizer person, but I wanted to go see a movie. And I was also writing about it. But you know, it was a very strange experience. It was very fun to be in a movie theater and to see trailers and all of that. The movie itself, but you know, it's we'll see. I don't know. No one knows.
My wife and I are big movie goers and haven't been to a theater since late February, and sharing the same concerns many people have. I wanted to ask, when you were in the theater, and this is a very personal thing, did you get popcorn? Did you get drinks? I mean, that's so much a part of the. Oh, that's a definite no.
No way. Not only not, Wayne, but I was looking around. The theater was, it was an 11 a.m. show on the day that it opened officially. And it said on the website that it was sold out, but there were maybe 25 people in a fairly good sized auditorium. So not only did I not get popcorn or any other food or drinks, but I was judging people who did, because that meant that they were taking off their masks. And Tenet is a 2.5 hour movie. And you know, I was shocked that there were people who were getting food.
Okay, I was germophobic before the pandemic. No, that's done it for me. I'm sorry.
Kate, what do you think? Will there be an Oscar ceremony this year?
Definitely, definitely. I think that various award shows have shown that it's possible. And actually, I don't know about you guys, but I enjoyed watching the Emmys this year in a way that I usually don't. It's also made me think it's very strange how quickly we've gotten used to everything being virtual and digital. And you know, it's like these are our lives now. I mean, you guys know, you do your show over you know, WebEx. So you know, it's really. This is the way it is. And, you know, I do think, I don't know how many movies it will be. I think that there will be movies that can't if there's a weak field and they think that they might win an Oscar because, especially because there's less competition than usual. You know, we also might see the first Netflix Best Picture because of what's happening right now, because they have a strong slate going into Oscar season.
So what's on your radar for good shows that we can look forward to that have already been produced that we ought to watch? I mean, let's sort of close this out on a nice note of things that we can look forward to or should be looking for through the eyes of somebody who knows this industry so well.
I'm not a shill for Netflix by any means, but I'm very excited to see season 4 of The Crown. It's coming in November. I also watched a show that by the time this is on, I think will have gone up, called The Queen's Gambit, which is a show that's also going to be on Netflix. It's about a young woman who's a chess prodigy. There's a show on HBO starring Hugh Grant and Nicole Kidman called The Undoing. That's a very fun thriller. So I recommend all of those.
Something to look forward to for sure.
Do you have a sense of in the reality TV industry, that's all based on experience and in-person contact, how do they cope with this kind of social separation?
Well, by quarantining. A lot of them. I mean, you know, The Bachelorette filmed in quarantine, Love Island filmed in quarantine, CBS had Big Brother, everyone was quarantined. The shows that are like docu-soaps that follow people around, depending on where they are, those are also back in production. Bravo has several Real Housewives going right now. And, you know, a place like Atlanta that barely ever closed, it was really up to the Bravo and the production company that makes the show to figure out when they felt safe doing it and, you know, how to do it so that people weren't getting sick and causing other people to get sick. But certainly there's going to be a storyline on The Real Housewives of Orange County this upcoming season, which I'm sure you guys are huge fans of, in which one of the women on the show gets coronavirus, and she has 3 daughters and all of them get it. And I think with reality shows for now, we will be seeing people fighting about masks, and it's going to reflect the way life is right now. People are going to be fighting about masks and being worried about getting sick. And you know, it's whether viewers will want to see that when that's what our actual lives are like is a good question.
Well, Kate, I'm glad we didn't have to fight about masks with you. She's Kate Arthur. Thank you so much for being with us. That's all the time we have this week. But if you want to know more about Story in the Public Square, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter, or visit pelscenter.org, where you can always catch up on previous episodes. For G. Wayne Miller, I'm Jim Lutis, asking you to join us again next time for more Story in the Public Square.